Born in the grip of oppression, I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. But when I'm attacked, I protect and defend. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free.
Welcome everyone, and I certainly hope that you all have enjoyed your President's Day holiday. I wonder how many people remember that we never really had a President's Day. What we did in the month of February was honor two of our greatest presidents, George Washington and Abraham Lincoln. George Washington's birthday is the 22nd of February, and Abraham Lincoln is the 12th of February. And I remember both going to school and teaching and talking about how great these two men were, because the most important thing to them was telling the truth. And they were famous for telling the truth. Truth leads to trust. And right now, there is a very big lack of trust of our government in the United States. And this is going to go on and on and on as long as the government ignores we the people. And one of the big things that I believe they are ignoring is inflation. So we're going to be talking about that today. And you are listening to Karen Schoen. This is the Prism of America's Education. I am brought to you live on America Out Loud Talk Radio Network with my wonderful sponsor, the Florida Citizens Alliance. And we'll be talking more about what the Alliance is up to going on in Florida. Everybody looks at Florida and wants to emulate Florida. Well, we have our own problems as well, and I'm going to share that with you. I said we're going to talk about inflation, and I have been going through a lot of information regarding inflation, listening to both sides critically talk about the rise of prices and goods and services and the blockade, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't believe that that's the real cause of inflation. I believe that the cause of inflation is the fact that America is no longer energy-free country. And we are now relying on our enemies to supply us with probably the most needed source of energy, the most used source of energy in America, and that would be our oil reserves. So for years and years and years, we have been talking about oil and not talking about the fact that America has more oil in our reserves that we have found than any other country in the world. A listener just sent this to me, and I wanted to share it with you. U.S. Geological Service issued a report April 2008, folks, listen to that, 2008, that only scientists and oil men knew were coming. But it was a big deal. It was a revised report that hadn't been updated since 1995 on actually how much oil was in the area of the western two-thirds of North Dakota, western South Dakota, and extreme eastern Montana. The Bakken is the largest domestic oil discovery since Alaska's Prudhoe Bay and has the potential to eliminate all of American dependence on foreign oil. That was kept a secret. That was a lie. And that's why telling the truth is so important. This oil reserve is worth more than $5.3 trillion by today's prices. And it has an excess of up to 500 billion barrels a day. That would take America through 2,000 years straight of never having to look for oil. It is amazing. It's 8 times as much oil as Saudi Arabia, 18 times as much as Iraq, 21 times as much oil as Kuwait, 22 times as much as Iran, and 500 times as much as Yemen. And yet, what are we doing and why? Well, I have asked a friend who has been with us before and has lended his expertise to our dilemma, which is, why are they hiding this from the American people? Why won't they let us drill for oil? And don't they realize that this oil deficit is causing inflation? Who are these economists that are experts? Where are they coming from? Because they're certainly not saying anything. Sterling Burnett, who is a PhD and a senior fellow and managing editor at the Heartland Institute, is going to share his expertise and tell us, Sterling, what is going on? Why are we being pushed into being dependent on our enemies when we have so much oil in America? And welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me back again. A lot of things are going on. We've had a long time of energy dependence. It grew. We actually started becoming dependent in the 60s and 70s. The last time we were sort of independent was the 50s. After the U.S. oil embargo, rather than doing the things necessary to make us energy independent then, we spent a lot of money. We created Department of Energy. You know, what we needed to solve the oil crisis was Department of Energy. Yeah, right. Created Department of Energy, which became basically the Department of Suppressing Energy. We invested in wind and solar. We've been doing it since the 70s. Everyone thinks, oh, well, it's, you know, brand new. We're trying something new. No, since the 70s, we've been doing this stuff. And what we didn't do is open up ANWR, the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, which had 9 billion barrels of oil estimated mid-range. We have a whole oil reserve up there. It's called National Petroleum Reserve A, Alaska. National Petroleum, it was set up specifically as a petroleum reserve. We haven't been able to drill there. The government hasn't allowed us to drill there. So what happened was, for years and years, politicians kept talking about the dangers of being energy dependent. We imported more and more oil from friends. We got a lot of oil from Canada. We got oil from neighboring Mexico. But we also became increasingly reliant on countries that aren't necessarily our friends all the time, particularly the OPEC countries, Venezuela. Saudi Arabia has been off and on a friend, but other countries in OPEC haven't always been our friends or allies. Politicians wrung their hands, says there's nothing we can do about it as we imported more oil. Then came Trump. And Trump said he didn't just want to make America energy independent. He wanted to make us energy dominant. Now, even before Trump, just under the second Bush, the fracking revolution began. And that was what you've got going on in North Dakota. The fracking revolution began. And so oil was already starting to come in Texas and North Dakota in particular, but also in some northeastern states, more natural gas there. So natural gas prices fell because we had a lot of natural gas reserves being discovered. But still, when Obama came into office, he did a lot to try and suppress oil and gas production because he was worried about climate change. He was going to control the weather 100 years from now by making us energy dependent today. And then Trump came into office. He says, no more of that nonsense. We're going to become energy independent and energy dominant. And in fact, we did. For the first time since the 1950s, we exported more petroleum resources than we imported for the first time ever. I mean, since the 50s, I should say. We had to export some crude oil because we don't have refineries. We haven't built a new refinery in years. And the refineries we have weren't built to refine the types of oil we were finding in certain areas. So we had to ship the crude abroad where it would be refined, but we were shipping more crude abroad than we were importing for the first time since the 1950s. So we had, in a sense, become energy independent as Trump wanted. And in less than a year, truthfully, in less than a few months, Biden turned that all around. Isn't that great? You know, Trump pushed to make America great again. Biden immediately stepped in and said, we're going to make America dependent again. And the impact is felt throughout the economy. Look, he canceled the Keystone XL pipeline, shafting our closest neighbor and trading partner, Canada. He canceled oil and gas leases on public lands, contrary to law, because a federal court stepped in and said, you can't do that. And he said, oh, I know. We'll get back on that. And he still ignored it. He keeps ignoring it. He's like the apocryphal president. Andrew Jackson with the Indians, with the court. The court said he couldn't move the Cherokee and the five civilized tribes out of Tennessee and Northeast. And he said, Mr. Justice, you have made your ruling, now enforce it. And we had the Trail of Tears. Well, that's how Biden is on the oil and gas. He says, yeah, I know you said we can't do that. And we're not doing it, but we're not doing it. He's just not offering oil and gas lease sales, despite the fact that by law, they have to be scheduled and offered. So he's ignoring the courts on this. He's shut down pipelines. He's held up other pipelines. He's imposing new rules on oil and gas production, methane emission rules. He wants to impose higher fees on oil and gas production. All of these things suppress oil and gas production. And the predictable result is when you have less oil and gas and you have greater demand, because remember, he is presiding over the economy where people are going back to work after an entire year almost of a shutdown. So we've got rising demand. We've got suppressed supply. And so you have higher prices. But higher prices for energy go through the entire economy because all the economies depend on energy.
It affects every product. It's not just the gas that you're putting in your car. Oil and gas, oil is used for multiple products that have nothing to do even with energy. It's used to create. Isn't oil necessary for plastics?
Oil and gas are both necessary for plastics. They're both necessary for chemicals. We, you know, all of our chemicals. Look, so all your pesticides, all your fertilizers, all your industrial chemicals all require either oil or natural gas or both. All your lubricants, oil, natural gas, or both. And that includes lubricants for things like wind turbines. You want wind turbines? That's fine. But you got gears in there that need to be turning, and they require oil and natural gas. Almost all your plastics, oil and natural gas. So your food, look, your food is grown by farmers driving diesel tractors. They put on pesticides and fertilizers using diesel tractors. The lighting they use when they work at night run off diesel generators. When they're harvested, it requires diesel tractors. When they are transported to either wholesalers, to grain bins, or to the market, diesel trucks. The point is, every time you add cost to farmers' fuel for all of these things, you're adding cost to your food. So your food prices rise.
Also, aren't we adding cost on the fertilizer? Because we live on a farm. And one of the things we're going to be planting some things. And we went shopping last week. And the fertilizer cost is almost three times what we paid for it last year.
No, that's what I said, is that it goes throughout the supply chain for agriculture, because fertilizers and pesticides are made either from or using oil and natural gas.
Right. And even notice now the price of seeds has tripled. The price of a tree, we used to be able to get a fruit tree for $15, $20 in a 5-gallon pot. Now that same fruit tree is $30.
And why is that? You know, why are that those prices more? I'll tell you why. Well, the fruit trees are grown on a farm, and they use irrigated water that's run using pumps, which require oil and gas. And then they're transported to the market via tractor trailer trucks, which require oil. So, diesel fuel. So the point is, it's throughout the supply chain. You don't have anything in your house, I would wager. Not just you. I'm talking the public in general. They can look around at everything in their house. And at some point in time, oil or gas or both were used to either produce or deliver that product. And so when you raise the price, when you make it more expensive to produce oil and gas, or you restrict the supply, you're raising the price on everything. When so many of our goods are shipped in from abroad, right? For good or for bad, we buy a lot of stuff from overseas. Well, how does that get here? By ship, which requires naval bunker fuel and diesel. So you raise the price of that. You're raising the price of shipping. You're raising the price of rail to transport it. You're increasing the cost of everything throughout the supply chain.
Boy, here's a good thing to do with your kids. When you start talking about the importance of fossil fuel, play a little game of takeaway with them. Tell them no fossil fuel. Oops, there goes your computer. Ooh, bye-bye glasses. Ooh, no more cell phone. Because every single one of those products depends on oil and gas for its production. Now, Sterling, you made me think of something. Is one of the goals of the Great Reset is to control people and to control what they consume. So by stopping and slowing the production of fossil fuels, aren't we controlling the people into what they will consume? Because there will be less goods, and then the goods that are available will be the ones that would be sanctioned by the government, because they'll be the ones that would be able to use the fuel.
It's sort of a never-ending cycle. It's suppress energy, lie about the causes for the higher energy prices, and propose solutions which either control how people live or which raise energy prices and make the energy supply more intermittent and less reliable. So you say, oh no, your heating and cooling costs aren't due to closing coal plants and natural gas plants. It's due to an aging system. And if we just have more wind and solar, we'll reduce your prices. Well, of course, you add wind and solar to the expense of reliable plants, and the sun doesn't shine, and the wind, you know, it's nighttime and the wind's not blowing, where are you going to get your energy from? We'll have batteries. Okay, so you build a huge, an enormous battery farm, which you hope doesn't catch fire like a ship in the ocean, for instance.
Yes, that just happened.
Right. Or a battery plant in Australia that burned for a few weeks. But so you hope that doesn't happen. But so you have the battery plant. The problem is battery plants cost more than every other source of energy. It's the most expensive form of electric power. So,
and also, what do you do with the batteries when you're finished with them and you need a new battery? Where do you put it?
Pesky storage and recycling and how to handle it. Yeah, those small problems that we're not going to factor in. But the point is, they've lied about the causes of the energy shortage. They've lied about the causes of the higher prices. You say, oh, well, it's because so many people are going back to work. Oh, the economy's humming and we can't keep up. And that's inflation. No, you can't keep up when you suppress the energy supply. When you make everything more expensive, at the same time as it is true, people are going back to work. So at the same time as you're increasing demand, you're artificially restricting supply. And that's the part they're not talking about. And like you say, it is part of the Great Reset, because it's not just about controlling people's economic choices. It's about controlling how people live. Do you want children? No, we don't want you to have too many children. It goes back to population control.
Right.
And so because in the U.S., we're not China, we can't dictate yet so far how many children you have. We just make it more expensive for you to have children. Do you want a nice house with a big lawn? Oh, no. That we're going to make those too expensive. We want you all moving into dense locations, everyone back into the city, living on top of each other, living along rail lines so they don't use cars. You know, it's all about controlling how people live. Now, mind you, they want to control how you and I live, how average people live. They don't want to control how they live. Leonardo DiCaprio under any system, Jeff Bezos under any system, Bill Gates, under any system, they ain't going to be living like we live. They will still take their private jets to win their awards for fighting climate change.
This is
John Kerry will lecture us on our carbon footprint as he takes a private jet on vacation and then takes the same private jet to an award on climate change. And he says, well, that's okay because I'm important. And he said that. He says, I'm important. Well, the rest of us aren't.
Yeah, and that always brings to mind something that I used to tell my kids all the time. Who died and left you, boss? Nobody. You are not our boss. And of course, they're lying about climate changes as well, thinking that stopping using fossil fuel is going to stop a tornado. How does that work?
Well, it doesn't.
The short answer is
it doesn't.
It doesn't. I always told everybody with my friends up north, if you think that you can control climate change, you got a blizzard right now. I think everybody should go outside and breathe on the snow. Look at how fast you'll melt it, because there's where your CO2. It doesn't work that way, folks. Yes.
Well, go in. I can't speak for you, but I sometimes get to have the honor of giving a presentation or lectures. And I'm going to start doing this. A friend of mine does this. He takes a CO2 reader to every lecture he goes to. And so he says, okay, kids, what's the dangerous level of carbon dioxide according to the IPCC? And they say, we were at 280 parts per million and now we're up to 400. We got to go back. It's dangerous. And he takes out his carbon dioxide meter. He says, what do you think it is in this room right now? How many of you are dying? Because it's 700 parts per million, 300 parts per million higher than it is outside, which you say is dangerous. Okay, so are we, anyone feeling faint? He says, okay, now you come breathe on the meter, and you breathe on it and 1500 parts per million come out of your body. He says, he points out CO2 is not toxic. It is not, not at any foreseeable level. There is a level, where they say it could be toxic, but it's not at 5,000 parts per million. It's not at 1500 parts per million, which is what we breathe out. And it's certainly not anything we're experiencing on a day-to-day basis. And the climate, the hubris to think we control it, at least our ancestors didn't think they controlled the weather. They sacrificed people to the gods, right? They threw them in volcanoes, whatever. They held their rain dances. They prayed to the gods, but they didn't pretend they themselves actually controlled the weather. They wanted to placate the gods so the gods would give them favorable weather. They acknowledge that we don't control the weather. Only in this age do we think we actually control the weather.
How arrogant of us to think that we can control something like that. I challenge anybody to go outside in a Florida hurricane and tell the hurricane to stop. Because I'm going to control it. I don't think so. There are so many misconceptions about CO2. That's a whole other conversation. So, Sterling, you're going to have to come back and we're going to have to talk about that, because people have no idea really the importance of CO2. How many people realize that farmers actually pump CO2 into their greenhouses to make their plants healthier? What happens if we get rid of all the CO2?
Well, a lot of people don't realize that during the depths of the last ice age, CO2 levels on Earth have been above 5,000 parts per million. They've been much, much higher than they have been for the vast majority of history. They've been much higher than they are today. But they have slowly declined over time. And they've been taken up into the earth, into carbonaceous rocks, made into carbonaceous rocks over time, under pressure as they've been taken into the soil. They have been soaked up in the oceans, in the ocean floors. So over time, we've been drawing carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. And during the last ice age, during the depths of the last ice age, we were down to 180 parts per million. And you say, oh, wow, what does that mean? Well, plants can no longer exercise photosynthesis at 150 parts per million. In a few, in a couple, at the rate we were going in a couple of million years, and that's a long way off, but geologic time, not that long, plants on Earth would no longer survive because they wouldn't be able to do photosynthesis because the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere would not be high enough because over time it was drawing down. And we've started adding CO2 back. Now, the CO2 initially started adding back after we came out of the ice age by itself, and it reached 280 parts per million before we reached the industrial age. But still, that is low by historical standards. Well, most plants evolved when CO2 was much higher than it is today.
We're going to have you come back because we're coming to the end of our segment, and I want people to know where they can find you. So please tell everyone a little bit about the Heartland Institute and what you guys are doing.
Well, Heartland Institute's based in Illinois, Arlington Heights, formerly Chicago, a little outside of Chicago. We've been around for more than 30 years, I think 35 or more, long before I joined the organization. We work on state and federal issues. We have a presence in every state. We contact state legislators because what happens in the states often affects what goes on in the feds, and what happens at the federal government often impinges upon the states. More often, that's happening nowadays, but didn't used to. Used to, states ran their own business for the most part. So we promote innovative free market solutions to public policy problems. We cover a variety of topics. I happen to do energy and environment, but we also cover healthcare, budget and taxes, education, you know, the topics that are important to people, the pocketbook topics, issues. Please come to heartland.org. Or if you're interested particularly in our work on energy and climate change, go to climaterealism.com or climateatglance.com, or subscribe to my weekly climate change weekly newsletter.
Very important, folks. Fabulous articles. You will get insight that you have not thought you would understand, and it is all absolutely 100% verifiable and true. Sterling, thank you so much for joining me today. It has been a pleasure as always, and we're going to have that CO2 conversation. So hopefully you'll come back again.
I will, and don't hesitate to contact me if you can ever use me. Take care.
Absolutely. Folks, you're listening to Karen Schoen. This is the Prism of America's Education, brought to you on the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network with my wonderful sponsor, the Florida Citizens Alliance. Don't go away. Don't touch that dial. Don't touch that pad. Just stay where you are, and we'll be right back.
Because of COVID-19, many Americans worry about their health four times a day. That's 112 times per month. But by simply keeping our immune system strong, we can stay healthy and put our worries at ease. One little known way to do this is by taking AC11, a patented supplement from a plant in the Amazon rainforest. Studied for over 20 years and backed by over 40 scientific peer-reviewed studies, taking AC11 has been proven to extend the life of immune cells called leukocytes, allowing you to boost immunity naturally. Go to healthycell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of AC11. That's healthycell.com, HEALTHYCELL, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
The spirit of American liberty and justice is woven into the soul of America Out Loud. We are the voice of a nation, the American nation, that is. This is Malcolm Out Loud. I invite you back to AmericaOutLoud.com, where the fight for liberty and justice continues. America Out Loud Talk Radio.
It's time to rethink COVID disinfection. A study by Harvard, Drexel, and Virginia Tech concluded, we don't have a single documented case of COVID transmission through surfaces. The reality is that COVID spreads mainly through the air. Shared air is the problem, not shared surfaces. The solution is the Genesis Fogger, which uses natural HOCl to disinfect both air and surfaces simultaneously. It's perfect for home or business. NIH says HOCl may well be the disinfectant of choice for coronaviruses. There's nothing more natural or more effective. Genesis fogs at the precise particle size to combat COVID and other harmful pathogens. It's what's missing from your disinfecting protocol. Visit genesisfogger.com. America Out Loud listeners receive a 15% discount with promo code OUTLOUD at genesisfogger.com/outloud.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Karen Schoen. You're listening to the Prism of America's Education, brought to you on the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network with my wonderful sponsor, the Florida Citizens Alliance, who has been on a mission. And this is a disgusting thing that's going on in Florida. So everybody thinks Florida is absolutely wonderful until. And what is the until? Until it gets to the rhinos who are our legislators in our state house. The Alliance had a bill, 1305. It was going through all of the committees, made it through all of the committees. And then it gets to the spot where it has to be heard in front of the whole Senate or in front of the whole House. And the Speaker of the House said, no. The President of the Senate said, no. Speaker Sprouls and President Simpson both said that they don't want to hear a bill that would eliminate pornography in schools. That is a disgrace. And Wilton Simpson thinks that he is going to be the Commissioner of Agriculture. I am going to be sending out lots of information on what he did. Why on earth would we want a man who agrees with pornography and agrees with that it's okay to abuse children, but it's not okay, and it's okay for him to be Commissioner of Agriculture? I don't think so. Well, we have a lot of things that we're going to be talking about in this session right now. And one of them is a very, very brief summary that I just want to remind everybody. We take a look at Canada. Please take a look at Canada. Look at what is going on there. Look at what Justin Trudeau has done. We have an opportunity in our House and Senate to stop Biden's Emergency Powers Act by calling our legislators. So make sure that you call them tomorrow and tell them they better vote no when it comes to increasing the emergency powers, because according to everybody else, the pandemic is way, way over. It's overdue of being over. So while Biden is saying we're going to be wearing masks for another 90 days, the scientists are saying that's wrong. That's not helping. That's not doing anything. And COVID is now being reduced to a cold, which is probably what it was to begin with. In any event, should you decide not to comply, there is a strong possibility that eventually you will be cited for an social credits, because that's what's coming next. Now, social credits are the same kind of idea for an individual that an ESG score is for a corporation. Social credits means you're going to get a card, and that card is going to determine whether you are environmentally friendly, whether you believe in social justice, and how you obey your government. And based on those scores, you will have mobility, you'll be able to borrow money, you'll get government contracts, blah, blah, blah. But get a low score, and all of those things will drop away. Try to get on a plane. Try to get a car. Try to get anything. Your answer will be no, because Big Brother is watching you. Well, the same thing is going on with our corporations right now. And this is a huge problem, which was not introduced this year. This has been going on for quite some time. It came to America in 2015. It is part of the World Economic Forum's way to risk manage. Now, usually you risk manage a corporation by saying, oh, are they taking more money in than they are spending? And that would be your determining factor as to the risk that you would want to take investing in that company. Well, that's being changed now. Now a corporation has to comply with an environmental score, a social justice score, that's your E and your S, and then your G is, are they complying with the government? Well, in order for a corporation to exist now, they will all have to be woke. What can we do about it? Well, first of all, there are many things we can do about it. But before we go there, I want to bring on my guest and good friend, Sally Baptist, who has a show on blogtalkradio.com/American Statesman. Please go and visit Miss Sally's show. She really has a lot of wonderful things that are necessary to be talking about. And the reason why I had asked her to join me today is because the other day I was on her show and she was asking questions to President Trump. Remember I said the ESG score came into play in 2015? Did President Trump know about that? Why on earth would you allow that to be the risk factor that you would manage to be able to give corporations money? No wonder why they go out of business, because nobody is understanding their risk. Now, I know, Sally, you work in the banking. You're familiar with the banking industry. Can you imagine the banks now giving money to corporations just because they are environmentally friendly? Would you lend money to a corporation? That's how we wound up with Solyndra, don't you think? Welcome to the show, Miss Sally. It is always great to talk to you. You came up with incredible questions that you wanted President Trump to answer. So I'd like to go over those with you because I thought that this is really excellent. We have to vet our candidates. We can't take President Trump just because he was president and say, wow, because he did a good job then, we're sure he's going to do a good job now. Are we sure? Do we actually know that? I don't think so. But there are questions that we should be asking him. And I want to start off with those questions because I thought they were really good. And your first question was, why did you appoint Elaine Chao as your Secretary of Transportation? What made you ask that question, Miss Sally?
Well, first off, Karen, thank you for inviting me to the show. And this is, we need to definitely talk more about this. Well, the thing is, as you know, I've been in the transportation subject because of roads and things like that. And roads. So I already took an interest in transportation. But in this case, just so for those who don't know, Elaine Chao is the wife of Senator Mitch McConnell. However, she's also the daughter of a very, very wealthy Chinese father. And between the Chinese are major into transportation, Foremost Transportation. If you're not familiar with them, go out there and see how big Foremost Transportation is in this country. The access that we have given, the Chinese government paid for the ships to send over here. The Communist Chinese Party is all involved in this part of it too. So when you're supporting Elaine Chao, you're supporting Communist China. Okay, so why would you put her in a position of transportation with everything we were doing with trade and everything else with China? Seems very bizarre to me.
However, it certainly does.
President Trump, the art of the deal, Senator Mitch McConnell, those of us who have followed Mitch McConnell know he's a rhino. I don't like seeing him there, and I should hope the GOP doesn't make him the Senate president again. But I said, was he making some kind of a deal with Mitch McConnell to let his wife again, closely related to communist China, be the secretary if he was going to do something. So was there a game going on with him, Mitch McConnell, and letting her be the secretary? Did he not understand her role and her involvement in transportation with communist China? It doesn't make sense. It, of all people to put there, what was the deal?
Well, the only deal that I could think of would be a deal that would tell Mitch McConnell, I'm going to be nominating all of these judges and I want your support. Other than that, McConnell didn't really offer Trump much help of anything else. So that would be the only thing I could think of. But that, again, I think that's an excellent question. Why on earth did he pick Elaine Chao? So that would be something that we should be asking. And when his surrogates come around and they want to meet with you and they're going to go to towns and communities, you got to ask questions, folks, and you got to ask the right ones. Not, I mean, it's nice to know, what are Melania and Barron doing now? That's a nice thing to know, but that is not a good question to help the American people. I would say that's an excellent question. You also wanted to know, why did he hand over our country to Anthony Fauci? I don't think he found out Anthony's history. I think whoever was doing the vetting did a lousy job. But why did you ask that question, Sally?
Well, I'm going to start off by saying, first off, for the record, Trump did many, many things I liked. Okay, so, but there were some seriously big mistakes here that really had major, major impacts on us that wiped out all the good he did, basically, as I think everybody should know by looking at Biden out there right now. But when it comes to Anthony Fauci, I totally get that President Trump was not a doctor. He was going to the highest authority in infectious disease and all this other, the NIH, the NAID. He was going to the expert. Okay, fine. You consult with the expert, but you don't let him go loose. The critical point, which leads to a couple other questions, there was the known therapy. Doctors were coming forward to you, President Trump, saying hydroxychloroquine. You saw it work. You saw the reports on the mask. You're seeing all this information that's contradicting what Fauci is saying. And Fauci is out there destroying the country. And you just let him take over making decisions, have him put mandates out there and working with the CDC. All this stuff, you handed over our country to this moron. As far as I'm concerned, Anthony Fauci needs to be charged with crimes against humanity. But obviously, Trump didn't know anything about his history, didn't know the stuff what he did with the AIDS vaccine and all this other stuff, didn't know him well enough. And he was too willing to say, here's my expert. You help out. You're the expert. You tell stuff. And then he just let him there. And some of this, I don't know if we want to go into this part yet, but it was into his task force. We may want to save that for the next question. But Anthony Fauci was dictating what this country should do, including lockdowns, promoting them, and misleading people. And Trump didn't seem to double check or question anything he was doing. How soon was it when he knew about hydroxychloroquine? At that point in time, he should have said, wait a minute, hold on. If we have these known therapies, we should test these known therapies. We shouldn't be letting people die, basically. But it was at that point he should have started truly questioning Fauci, but he let him keep going.
Yes, I agree with you. And I would have much preferred Dr. Scott Atlas to take over Fauci's spot. And you also said something very important. I don't think that he really knew the depth of Fauci. I don't think. And that was a big mistake. But we also have to understand the way Trump works. And you can read that in The Art of the Deal. What he likes to do is he has a problem, and then he picks experts that he feels will manage that problem. He says, you're the expert, I'm going to take my clues from you. And he becomes hands off, bowing to the expert. You can't be an expert in everything. Everybody knows that. The best leader always surrounds themselves with the best people that they can find. And then you rely on those people. From what I was reading and heard, Mike Pence was virtually useless. And everybody was just bowing to Fauci. And now we have a Fauci coming out and saying, kids in school should still be wearing their masks when the CDC and the scientists are saying masks are useless. There is only one way that we can get rid of Fauci, and I think that that is going to be the 2022 election. You asked what was the reason that he promoted warp speed when many of the doctors and scientists told him that there were other therapeutics. What do you think that was all about?
This kind of links up with the Anthony Fauci thing, too. He was rejecting these other experts. He somehow came to some conclusion. There's a couple of parts when it comes to this Operation Warp Speed. Personally, real thing, again, is being either naive or just misinformed by those around him. People needed to understand emergency use authorization for a vaccine would only be allowed if there were no known therapies. But there were known therapies. He ignored, and this is where he gets to, you know, his determination to show he could get past all this red tape and all this other nonsense, he could get this done fast enough, just like he got the ventilators to the hospital, which was a good thing. He was just determined to show, yes, we can do this. We can do this. We're better than this. We don't have to spend 10 years studying. But when he said that, in his own mindset, it's like, well, wait a minute. You can only do that if you don't have a known therapy. You know that hydroxychloroquine's out there. Right? And somewhere in there is when he found about ivermectin. That were known therapies that were known to be working. He spoke with a lady or was engaged in some discussion with that one lady whose life was saved by hydroxychloroquine. He couldn't let that get in the way. When he refused to acknowledge the known therapies, when there's known therapeutics, all because he wanted to get a vaccine out there because that was going to save the world and he was going to get past all the red tape. As the sad part is, he killed people's lives were lost because of that. They really were. He needs to understand that. What was in his mind to be so determined? Ignore the real science. Fauci, and which goes back to Fauci. Fauci, who knew that hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin were not horse medicine and all this other stuff, and were known therapies that had been out there for 60 years on the one, a Nobel Peace Prize on the other one, and all this other stuff. And Fauci was lying to him, and he was taking it. Wait a minute. So Fauci's lying to you. Supporting your Operation Warp Speed, which is supporting the FDA and Big Pharma. Wait a minute, there's too many questions here. Why did you turn a blind eye to the facts and keep promoting Operation Warp Speed?
Yeah, that is a good question. And your next question is equally as good. Why did he promote Big Pharma? I believe, like you said, he was lied to, but he himself used ivermectin. Even though you were lied to, you have proof of yourself. And also, folks, let's remember what was happening at that time as well, because every news outlet had all of these big maps of all of the cases of COVID all around the country. And every day they were ticking off case after case after case. What were they not focusing on? The amount of deaths, to me, was more important than the amount of cases. And then what they had done was they took the hospitals and they told the hospitals, we'll give you more money to treat a COVID patient than we will to treat something else. All of these numbers, all of this data was skewed. And if Trump is then being lied to, which we know he was, and you're right, why did you listen? So there's something in there that we have to figure out. I don't know what it is. But remember, he also made a deal with the pharmacy, with Big Pharma, to reduce the price of all of the drugs that were coming to America, to use the most favored nation clause and to say, we're paying for this, reduce the prices. He was involved in Big Pharma for a lot of reasons. Maybe that was why he allowed them to go forward with the vaccine, knowing that maybe the deal was, we'll reduce our prices for pharmaceuticals and you let us go and bring out this vaccine. So I could see that being the deal, whether or not it was, I have no idea. But that was the one that seems to logically land on my lap.
And just to add to that, so the question is, was this the art of the deal? And what deal did you make? And he's disregarding it and turning a blind eye to the things that he knows. He had to know hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin were known therapies. He had to know that. Did he not understand emergency use authorization? I think someone had to tell him that too. So why did he turn a blind eye? Why did he go along with Fauci when he said he didn't really trust Fauci? He brought in Scott Atlas. Scott Atlas was you know, trashing so much of what Fauci was saying, but yet he kept letting Fauci go.
I know. It does not make sense. This is a big, huge question mark because he, as you said, he did so many wonderful things. But then when you look at the COVID incident, and I have to agree, it's probably because he was getting bad advice. But somewhere in there, even though you're getting bad advice, you have to make your own decisions. How many people could have been saved by using hydroxy or ivermectin or something in advance? Because I believe COVID was a real serious flu-like cold. I believe they used it so that they could destroy the election, so that they could force mail-in ballots. So I think that this was a perfect setup because he was fighting so many different incidences. They were on him for 3 years, 4 years for the Russia lying, Russia collusion. I can't imagine that he didn't know that these people were lying to him. We'll end with this one, Sally. Why do you think he endorsed Mitch McConnell? I think that was a humdinger, and that was a big one. That one should be in bold letters. Why on earth would, and he endorsed him twice, not once, twice.
The question is that, does he still support Operation Warp Speed, and does he not understand that vaccine has caused many babies to die too? But people need to understand what that vaccine has done for depopulation of the living and the unborn. A really big deal. But going back to the Mitch McConnell thing, he was always a rhino. Those of us who have been watching Mitch McConnell over the years, why would you endorse him? But why? It doesn't justify it. You can't go along with the rhino. Somebody, and Mitch McConnell has stabbed him in the back so many times. Why would you go there? What would make you believe? And if you talk to the real people out here, the real Americans who know what's going on, they could all tell you why you shouldn't reelect Mitch McConnell. Get him out of there. Why would you do this after he stabbed you in the back? The only thing he did was a couple of times helping you with Supreme Court, and that was right during the election. If it hadn't been right during the election when he was begging for your endorsement, he wouldn't have done that for you either.
I agree with you because they will go after him the same way they did before. So we could have a crushing defeat. We could destroy the Democrats. However, if we have a group of rhinos who are the same as Democrats, there's no difference there. This is the Uniparty. These are the globalists. It doesn't make any difference whether there's a D or an R after their name. That is irrelevant. It's what do they do and how do they think? And we have a core, I guess I could say 19, because those are the ones that signed the infrastructure bill, of 19 rhinos sitting in the Senate right now that will follow anti-Trump regulations and try to destroy the same thing will happen over again. So we have two jobs to do. And that is number one, we've got to vote all of the rhinos out. We've got to expose them. We ought to be on a rhino hunt. Show everybody what they're about, how much they hate us. You're right about depopulation. The vaccine, I believe, was the perfect setup to destroy the American population. And that's coming to fruition because the insurance companies, which can't lie as they are paying off death benefits, have to report deaths. And they said that the deaths in this country in the last quarter were up almost 40%. 40%. That is a huge number. And of course, they're never going to say that these people died from a vaccine of COVID. They're going to blame it on, oh, their cancer. These people could not get taken care of. How many cancer patients didn't go to the hospital, couldn't go? I think we have a lot of splaining to do. Okay, Miss Sally, tell everybody where they can find you and what advice you will give them.
Well, first thing is please tune in to American Statesman Blog Talk Radio, and you go to blogtalkradio.com/American Statesman. You'll see it's pure grassroots. I have a show typically once a week. We've got to get to the bottom of this, and we also have to take care of the election that happened, what happened in 2020. We cannot allow that to happen again. But what I would really like to say to people, obviously, you've got to be educated. Turn off the mainstream media. We're getting new media out there. In fact, as I heard, if it's true, a Trump supporter was the person who bought up CNN. We might actually have the cable network news, Real News. So that was a really big thing. Plus, Trump has his Truth social media thing that's going on. There's many other options. You no longer have to depend on mainstream media. Do your own research. Look at the other stuff and think about this. What would life be today had it not been for COVID? What was the real reason for COVID? And I ask two big questions out there. Had there not been an announcement of a pandemic, plandemic, how many of these people who had a cold or a flu, whatever, would have never gone to a hospital? Most people never went for a basic code. They'd go to the drugstore and pick whatever remedy up, whatever. They would have never gone, but they were enticed because of fear. So that's the one part of it. And then the other part, had it not been for COVID, what would have happened to the election? Who would be president today had it not been for COVID? This is just a big reason. And then also, it's estimated 85% of the people who died didn't die, would have been saved. Those that they reported death from the COVID would have been saved. But there truly was no virus. It was all a pandemic and a scheme against the people. But we can't fall for it. We have to do our own research and understand the truth, face the truth.
Yes.
Absolutely face the truth, get involved, speak up, ask the difficult questions. And we may like Trump, but he has to answer this question. What would you do different today? And that's the big question. And I know I've got to hurry up here because we're running out of time. But ask President Trump, if you had it to do all over again today, COVID, what would you do different? What do you think you maybe made some mistakes? How would you manage a COVID pandemic today?
Well, we also have a new option, and you just mentioned it. It's called Truth Social. So this is President Trump's social network. Ask those questions. Ask him. We have the opportunity to ask. And if enough people ask, the questions will get answered. So the question should be, now that you know the way everything transpired, what would you do differently? I love that question. That is terrific. Thank you, Sally, for joining me. This was a great discussion. You are listening to Karen Schoen. This is the Prism of America's Education, brought to you on the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network with my wonderful sponsor, Florida Citizens Alliance. Please go to the Alliance, go to their website. If you don't live in Florida and you see something you like, just copy it. Pay attention to your local elections and by all means vet your candidates. Don't take what they say word of mouth. See what they have done. What action have they done that would even one iota of making or wanting them to vote for you? These are important things. This is very important times. And if we want to save our country, we have to get engaged. And on that note, I will see you all again next week. Have a wonderful week. But,